Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your CEO and co-host, Paul David.
And I'm your other co-host, Maya Doran-Pohornby.
Today, we're excited to be joined by James Townsend, co-founder and CEO of Mobilize. We're going to talk about online communities for unpaid carers, something that's near and dear to a lot of our team members' hearts. We've got a lot of folks on our team at Literal Humans who have been carers, are carers. I, for one, have a dad who's getting older, has dementia, he's 81, and I've done my best to support him and, just be there for him in very much an unpaid care capacity. So very excited on a personal level to dive into today's conversations. And we've had some past episodes with a couple of folks in the tech community who are working on this issue. So it's a nice little addition to some of those past episodes, which we'll mention later on in the podcast. But first of all, by way of introduction, we're joined today by James Townsend, who's the co-founder and CEO of Mobilize. Mobilize is an online platform to provide expert support, tailored advice, and an online community, which is incredibly important for carers, to the 11 million unpaid carers across the UK. That is a staggering number of people who are doing the Lord's work and not getting paid for it. James was inspired to start Mobilize following his personal experience helping to care for his mother, who has MS. He's noticed the lack of support available to carers and realized that technology can help solve this problem.
So Mobilize partners with local authorities and NHS trusts to provide additional support to unpaid carers. It's grown rapidly since 2019 into a community of today 90,000 carers across the UK. From James's probably crisp and clear and loud audio, you're going to notice that he is no stranger to podcasts. James and his co-founder, Suzanne, host the Carer Catalyst podcast, where they speak to leaders in health innovation. So, James, what inspired you to start the podcast, and what are your favourite discussions that you've had on it so far?
Thank you, Maya. Well, I'm now very intimidated about the sound quality of my sound coming through. I hope this is living up to billing. Hey, the inspiration here is about bringing people together. So the Carer Catalyst podcast is an opportunity for commissioners around the country in the local authorities or the NHS trust that you mentioned to come and share ideas about what they're doing. So if you're in the public sector at the moment, it is really hard to manage that financial envelope and the duties that you have. It's complex, and the only way we're going to figure this out is to do it together and to learn from each other. So the Carer Catalyst podcast is bringing people together to learn from each other's experience. No one has the answer, but we can learn from each other. And to my mind, that is modeling exactly what we're doing for unpaid carers in the community. This is a complex role. It's stressful. It's different in every situation. But if we can bring people together to learn from each other, then we can start removing some of those friction points. So that's essentially what we do with the commissioners on the podcast.
We'd love to jump in with just, a deeply personal question. I mentioned this in the intro about being an unpaid carer myself, and love to just like understand your personal experience and where Mobilize was born out of. What support did you have, and maybe what support did you lack when you were serving as a carer?
Well, and Paul, thanks for sharing about your experience there. I think it's really important to note that this is basically something that every family either has seen in the past, is seeing at the moment, or can see barreling down the road towards them at the moment. My own experience, I have to say, I love my mum. I think she is just one of the most extraordinary people. And if you ever get a chance to meet her, you'll know exactly what I mean. And actually, for me, I've never seen what's going on as me being a carer. I'm son to my mum, and I want to do that to the best of my ability. I think that's the phrase you used a moment ago, Paul. And actually, I think the majority of people are in a similar situation. Now, the actual caring responsibilities that I've seen, I'm careful not to overstate them. But it's really interesting for me that when I was growing up, my mum was diagnosed when I was about six. And of course, you only experience your own childhood, right? So the idea that we would talk about my mum's condition and how it was progressing and so on was straightforward and normal. And it wasn't actually until I got to university where somebody kind of consistently asked, "How's your mum doing?" and all of this kind of thing. And I realized that it was a feature of my life that other people were seeing in me. And actually, most of the support came from other members of my family. And, this was very much a team effort all the way through. But it really felt like we were making it up as we went along. This was happening in first principles. Now, in some senses, that's right, because every caring situation is going to be different. So you can't lazily apply a template and say that it's all going to be the same. But at the same time, people have been there before. In the UK, you've got 11 million people around the UK. So even if your caring situation is one in a million, hey, let's find the other 10 people who have something similar to what you're experiencing, and we can learn from them. But of course, that's not there. So often, carers, as was my experience, plow on through and initially don't realize that they have a role, but then have to navigate a hugely complex system, the health and social care system, but also navigate the practicalities of caring. And for me, one of the most important bits is navigate the complex emotions that come with caring. So an inversion of the parenting role quite often, and having to do that, straight up. And there aren't many other situations in life where you just say, right, from a standing start, you've got to process all of this on your own. So what can we do? I think there's loads of options for implementing bits of support. We are never going to make caring for a family member easy or straightforward. But there are things that we can do to make it less difficult and to make it less complicated as well.
Yeah, I love that point about, loads we can do to layer on support and to help people not feel so alone in the journey. We'd love to also understand a bit more as well about, carers that you've come across who mobilize has impacted. What stories have you heard from folks who have leveraged the kind of work that you're doing, and how has it impacted their lives and their ability to care for their loved ones?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Maya, you mentioned the 90,000 figure at the top of the call there. And I forget that there's so many people milling around in the system. Sometimes they'll join the actual community, but very often they'll be on the mailing list. But that is a two-way mailing list, which is exciting. And actually, the big numbers don't resonate as much for me as the individuals that I get the privilege of being able to talk to every day. And there's one person, I'll call her Caroline to excuse her blushes. Really, really phenomenal woman, actually, who has been on the platform for a little while. And she's caring for her partner. And when she came to us, I think was feeling massively alone. Had family around her, but yes, as is so often the case in these conversations, in these situations, even with the people closest to you, there can be a sense of isolation and loneliness. Feeling massively overwhelmed by the task in front of her. And actually the phrase that she used when I was talking to her the other day was, she said that she was feeling like a bit of a doormat. Professionals were coming in and out of the house, friends, family were coming in and out, and she would open the door and then they'd walk straight past, and then her partner was the priority, and she was just there to allow that all to happen. And what I think is really exciting, I mean, not only have I found a friend in Caroline, and I really appreciate her company as we're going along, but she has built a community of genuine friends. So going to weddings and funerals of people that she's met on the platform, really making a meaningful connection there. But crucially, she's developed confidence in herself and in what her role is. And she's recognized that she is an expert. She understands her partner better than any of these professionals coming through, despite their many years of training and, I'm sure very high level of professionalism. And her role, she has a role and a purpose, and it's not just to open the door when the carers arrive. So she was saying that she now, having been supported by this amazing community and the courses that we can run, she now, when people arrive at the house, she says, right, you're coming into my house. This is how I want it to be. And she is much more confident in that space, which means, of course, that she can engage with the support that's coming in much more effectively. It makes just such a massive difference in that process. So, I mean, that's just one example of somebody who it's been wonderful to see her blossom just in the last couple of months.
I think that's a great example, James. And I really appreciate your point about the carers stepping into their own expertise on caregiving, and especially caregiving for loved ones that they know better than anyone else, and sometimes better than the person themselves who's receiving the care, right? Because they're just seeing this, right? And like Yeah, it just resonates with me so much. I mean, there were moments in the past 5 years of our business where, you know, I felt like I was falling apart. I felt like the business was falling apart because I had to direct so much time and attention towards caring for my dad. And you know, God bless, you know, my ex-co-founder and various team members who just stepped in and took care of the business while I was doing that, because I really did need to turn to those conversations and be the expert with the care home or with the nurse or with the other family member, you know. And this is happening across the ocean as well, you know what I mean? So to add insult to injury. So just really appreciate that and love to see tools like Mobilize and Yurtal who like lift up that expertise of carers and really help them stand in their own power and direct the care for their loved ones as they need to. So thank you for mentioning that piece.
Well, and Paul, if I can just build on that, something that we see so often, and the reason we're called Mobilize is that we're looking to mobilize the knowledge, the wisdom, and the expertise that people have. So not only do you become an expert in the person that you're looking after, you have something really valuable. And I've lost count of the number of people who've come to us and said, look, you know, I've been caring for a while. I've been out of the workplace. I've lost a lot of friends. I feel a bit kind of useless. And actually being able to reflect back and say, you have something incredibly valuable, which is you know how to do this stuff. And someone who's just starting a caring role can learn from you as you're going along. That, for me, is a really exciting framing of the asset that somebody, I mean, no one thinks of it as an asset, but it is an asset that people are building up as they go along.
Yeah, and to also develop avenues for policymakers to recognize the expertise of people like Caroline too. I love the idea of, yeah, empowering people to identify as experts. And I thought the idea of the virtual cuppa on Mobilize was a great way in which to do that and also to help people sort of emotionally navigate the complexity, as you mentioned before, of caring and their feelings about it. So could you describe what a virtual cuppa is to our listeners? And then more broadly, what other services Mobilize offers to its users?
Yeah. So, hey, the virtual cuppa came out just when COVID hit. We figured, crumbs, what we got to do something. And the first idea that came to us was this idea of a virtual cuppa every day. So you could hop online and have a cup of tea with some people around the country. And it's a kind of dopey concept, but it seems to be working. And we've now done thousands because we run them every day. And so a couple of my colleagues will facilitate these conversations, but I used to be a teacher, and you know, so you can make all the lesson plans in a world, and they'll have an idea about what we're going to talk about. You get a couple of carers coming along, and whatever has happened that morning could very quickly derail it. And it's wonderful to be able to have that kind of flexibility. So you're just spending 30, 40 minutes with other people who get it. And sometimes we'll talk a lot about caring and specific things. Other times we'll talk about pets, the wind, what we saw on TV. But crucially, knowing that we're talking to other people who get how complex and difficult caring can be. And that means that we can laugh together, we can cry together, we can share problems if we want to, and try and, you know, help out with advice. But crucially, just being together at moments when it can be lonely. So the cuppa is one way of doing that. We have a great little app. We're really pleased with the uptake of that, where people can connect. I think the fashionable word is asynchronously. So you have essentially a forum where you can share a picture of your dog or like whatever it might be. And it is striking how much stuff comes through there that doesn't appear to be caring related, but is all about creating connections with each other. And then we've got blogs and resources, which are all fed in via the community. So we put together a piece the other day about making your bathroom carer friendly. Now, Maya, Paul, I'm sure, you know, in 15 minutes, the three of us could come up with some pretty good suggestions, right? But we, by putting it out to the community, we got some amazing hacks on what you can do to your bathroom to make it much easier to be taking someone to the loo or cleaning them, washing them, or just, you know, frankly, dealing with the fact that you're doing 5 laundry runs a day in your home. So I'd really recommend that particular blog. But that is another example of us kind of just pooling the expertise that we all share with each other and making that available to more people.
Yeah, I'm always blown away, like as an unpaid carer as well, by the details, right? Like the devil is absolutely in these little details. Like, you know, I'm heading home for Christmas to Philly next week or 2 weeks, I guess. I'm excited. And just selecting a like an Airbnb, you know, like a place to stay, you know, and how many steps are there? Where is the bathroom? Where's the toilet? You know, how far is it? Where is, you know, like just all those little things. And really, I think yearning for a resource that does pull together all that information and, you know, has it at the ready for me to, you know, select a place that's ideal for my dad in this case, but just also extrapolating that to the millions of other carers out there who, you know, they really are hungry for a resource that brings all that stuff together and really puts it almost like I was talking to someone the other day, like an Airbnb for folks who have these, you know, different needs that just, you can't click these amenities like on Airbnb, for example, but, you know, maybe there's other platforms that are considering this. So something to think about.
Absolutely, Paul. And just making sure that we're kind of clocking the scale of this is really important. So we're reaching about 80% of the carers that we get on the platform have never previously accessed any support for their caring role. And you just imagine what the world would be like if we realized how many carers there are and those little things, so that our friends at Airbnb, of course, they have a little tick box for an accessible bathroom and all of the things, because somehow, and I hope that Mobilize can play a part in this, we've put the position of caring for a family member into the mainstream of people's lives.
And I would love to hear a bit more about your ambitions for Mobilize. But, you know, now you're at 90,000 users. What do you see for the next 10 years, or what do you hope to see?
I think there's a huge amount that we want to be growing. The first thing is reaching those carers who haven't previously accessed support. That is so important. That is so important because we need to make sure that we catch people early. Too often, we're waiting until we're in a crisis situation before any support's available. But if you get in there early, not only do you avoid the stress of that crisis situation, it's much more straightforward to solve, and of course actually cheaper, which makes a big difference to when you're talking at the scale that we are. Reaching people early and building that community, we would love to be the defining place that people go to. I'm not a parent, but people I know who've been through parenting, you get loads of advice, not all of it asked for and not all of it helpful. But when you're caring, you don't have that, partly because it may be that the parents who would be giving you the advice are the people receiving the care, and there's a complexity there. But it's also because we don't talk about caring as much. So building a community where we can have that conversation, big step forward from our perspective. But then the next stage, which I think is really crucial, is to then make a difference. So if we can exchange experiences in a really systemized way, then we can make a difference. We can be coaching carers to set their caring situation up in a sustainable and resilient way, which will mean that they can thrive for much longer and access the support that they need.
And in terms of that sort of self-identification piece, have you found that users of Mobilize skew to particular demographics? For instance, are young carers more likely to get on this sort of online community than older carers?
We're seeing some really interesting trends, actually. I mean, first up, there's an assumption sometimes that older generations won't want to engage with tech. And we get some fantastic, I think we used to call them silver surfers back in the day, who come on and are absolutely loving their ability to reach out to the rest of the world and engage with people through online means. But yeah, we do tend to skew towards younger people. And typically, actually, that tends to be people of working age, I think, who aren't able to access traditional services in the same way because they're working 9 to 5. So being able to log in at 2 a.m. and talk about the fact that there's poo on the floor and how do you get it out and all of that kind of thing, that can actually be really helpful. We're also noticing various trends around gender. So men tend to be underrepresented in those carers who are accessing support. We've still got a lot of work to do, but they are less badly represented, if that makes sense, or we are doing better at representing men than many routes to support. And one of the reasons for that that we've developed is a theory, rather, is that there's a sort of male characteristic which tends to be that sort of scurrying around and researching things in detail in the middle of the night. And our platform actually enables people to do that kind of anonymously, so you don't feel you have to share too much as you're coming into that conversation.
Want to ask you a question that connects to just one of the points you made previously about kind of just identifying carers and how much of a challenge that is. One of the things we realized, we implemented the 4-day work week back in 2022, and it's something we've remained committed to. And here's why. I mean, we literally just had our first ever client kick off about, you know, kind of disagreeing with our 4-day work week policy. And honestly, my reaction to it was, there's the door. Because one of the things we realized when we implemented that policy was realizing we're getting all these, you know, applications from folks who are carers, you know, and as someone who leads a company as a carer myself, that really matters to me that people can have that extra day a week to care for themselves if they're a carer, to care for people that they care for. So that's something come hell or high water that we're going to stick with. But it was really interesting to like see this, you know, sort of self-identification of carers come in through our interview process and our application process once we committed to that as a company. So cutting to the chase here, you gave an interview to the Health Innovation Network and you said that the toughest challenge that people face when trying to provide support to carers is the identification of carers. So, you know, carers sometimes don't realize that they're caring. Would love to dig into that more and have you explain that to us. And how do you get around this as Mobilize to really dig in and identify those carers?
Paul, so excited that you have also seen what a fantastic opportunity employing people who are carers is. I'm really proud of the fact that at Mobilize we've got so many carers in the team. And yeah, sometimes it means you've got to figure out the complexities of part-time working and accommodating things. But in return, you get just this fantastic pool of talent who are, particularly in the work that we're doing, absolutely crucial in terms of making that support is the right thing. Now, you asked about identification of carers, and I think there's probably three barriers that we're coming up against. The first is being able to notice that you've got a caring situation going on. And the old analogy of warming frogs in a saucepan, right? If you dive into a pan of hot water, you quickly notice that you're there. So sometimes your caring situation might start quite suddenly, in which case you know about it. But in the majority of cases, it probably happens quite slowly, and it's a little bit like salami slicing. So we need to think carefully about how we encourage people to notice that is happening in their life. The second piece is a bit of psychological resistance as well, because as a caring situation develops, you might be confronting a lot of emotions about seeing the person that you love develop a condition or be in a position of difficulty, and that can be quite difficult. So there's a level of denial that might be going on as well that we need to be sensitive to. And finally, there's an issue of accessibility. So there are a huge number of friction points in actually accessing any of the support that might be available. So by addressing some of those accessibility points, and we spoke a moment ago about the idea of being available 24/7, so that if you're working 9-to-5, you can still access the support. That's a key development, and it opens up support for a whole range of people who wouldn't otherwise be able to access it.
And in order to overcome those three barriers, I guess we need a really strong definition of what caring and what a caring situation is without putting red tape around it to accommodate people who identify as that. But I was wondering if you could just tell me how you delineate caring from familial obligations. And
yeah, I feel really strongly that so often when it comes to support, we're relying on carers to identify themselves. And there is a very clear definition in the Care Act, but nobody wakes up and says in the morning, gosh, you know what? I really identify as an unpaid carer according to the terms of the 2014 Care Act. That's not a thing. But yeah, that definition is broadly, if you're providing key levels of practical or emotional support to somebody who couldn't cope without it, that is your legal definition of a carer, if you like. But exactly as you say, Maya, most people see this just as part of their family responsibilities. And actually, what is really exciting about the tech that's involved here is that this is an all-you-can-eat buffet. So it doesn't cost us any more to be delivering that support to a greater number of people. In fact, the more people on the platform talking about caring responsibilities, the better the platform becomes, because it becomes richer with a broader set of information. So actually, in a world where this is all powered by tech and software, we can worry less about the individual cost and therefore putting that red tape around a specific definition and make this a much more generous offer than would otherwise be possible.
Yeah, so that moves me on quite nicely to asking you about how you are harnessing that rich amount of information about the 90,000 plus carers on your platform. So I know that you guys have released lots of very insightful reports. Would you be able to explain them a bit more, explain what informs them and then the findings of them and what you hope they will inform in turn?
Yeah, absolutely. And Maya, the first thing I should say on this is that carers as a group, we're particularly sensitive about people using our data. And I think that's something to do with the fact that we'll be registered on so many different systems with so many different organizations. If you're not careful, you can very quickly get overwhelmed with marketing emails and offers, but also, you know, some of the less attractive parts of the internet as well. In terms of dealing with data. So we're really sensitive to that. But fundamentally, the carers of our community love sharing their experiences if they think somebody else can benefit from that, so that someone else doesn't have to go through the same thing again, or the system can learn. So it's really exciting to be able to pull that information together and then share it with some of the commissioners who are our clients, but policymakers as well. You know, I'll give you an example of something which I think you and I are talking just before Christmas, and we've been talking to our carers about how they're feeling about in the run-up to Christmas. And it is really striking how many people find this an additional burden, a complexity that they are absolutely dreading. And that's partly because of the practicalities of having people in the house, organizing things, disrupting to routines, services that you normally rely on going off for a few days or even a couple of weeks. But there's also a lot of emotional baggage around Christmas. So memories of how things used to be just alerts us to how different and how challenging they can be now as well. And that can be very isolating and cause loneliness to a lot of people because everyone else seems to be having a great time. Well, we've been able to reflect back to our community that, you know what, if you're struggling with this, it's not that you're on your own, you're normal. Everyone else is struggling with this as well. So that just lightens the load a little. And I think being able to reflect back to our community what our experiences have been can be absolutely, absolutely significant. It's also really important that we do that work with policymakers as well, because my limited experience of politics and government and all of that kind of thing has told me that so many decisions are made around data and evidence. And if you don't have the data or the evidence behind something, it's really hard to ask for more funding from the Treasury or to change a piece of legislation or whatever. So hopefully what we can do is by sharing this data with policymakers, We can actually become we can make sure that carers have their voice better represented, that their experiences are seen by decision makers in a way that can make a difference for the future and change the nature of support that's available and change the way public services work to make sure that they are carer friendly effectively.
Yeah, that really resonates in terms of like, especially the piece around the holidays. Like, you know, you hope that people will go away and they, you know, have a restful period and a relaxed period. And but ultimately for a lot of folks who are unpaid carers, they end up, you know, just exhausting themselves even more because their caregiving responsibilities increase over that period of time. That's something that I'm looking forward to, you know, for at least the first week of my holiday. I'm lucky enough where I can, you know, have my dad in a care situation for the back end there. But really appreciate what you're doing in that context, Jane.
Thank you, Paul. And one of the highlights of my year actually is to, so on Christmas morning, this is largely a device for my mother to keep me out of the kitchen on Christmas morning. But the so we run a virtual cuppa on Christmas Day itself, and it's so moving to have people come along and you have a sort of recreated a different kind of family on that call, people coming along to support each other, sometimes looking for support themselves, And it's just it's a very moving moment.
I think also too, you know, we're seeing what's happening to society is like, you know, birth rates are falling, folks are getting older. So like what's coming for us in terms of the deluge of folks who are about to become carers, you know, paid and unpaid, is really, really astounding and something to reckon with. And so like, I feel like the need for the things, you know, tech like that, like you're building, is only becoming greater and greater with every passing year. So that demographic shift is something to really keep an eye on. So is that something y'all are thinking about in terms of the scale of what you're delivering and you know, how the needs are growing across communities in the UK and beyond?
There's some amazing work from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. They were kind of modeling out what we need to figure out. And we're looking at another million carers coming on stream, as it were, over the next couple of years. So one of the conversations that we're having with commissioners all the time is like, how are we creating systems and structures that are scalable to support a significant increase in the number of carers? And again, that piece around tech being able to connect us, instead of each carer coming to a formal service and requiring support that way, actually being able to connect carers into a peer community can be a really effective and scalable way of making sure that support is available.
And just to tag on to it too, I mean, look, as an employer, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, like it's something, frankly, that we hire for. Like when I interview someone, I kind of want to know. Yeah. You've been through some stuff in your life. So when that client kicks off, which they will do, or, you know, that journalist doesn't get back to you and you're stressing about it, like, it's not the toughest thing that you've been through. It's not going to break you. You know what I mean? So when I interview people, it's something I look for. I think about, obviously I can't hire for it explicitly, right? But I want to understand that you've kind of, you know, frankly had to care for someone other than yourself at some point in your life, you know? And to me, that's an asset. Whereas unfortunately, I think a lot of, you know, employers, they look at it as a deficit and they're like, oh, I don't want this person to be distracted from work and stuff like that. And I think it's high time we shifted that thinking, you know? And I think that's like a really deep cut, a really deep take on what, you know, EDI, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion actually means, like in the operation of your organization. Like, is that part of your hiring process to understand that? Obviously with respect to not, you know, sort of discriminating and having any prejudice against people, but factoring in your thinking at least.
And just to sort of close off this discussion, if you're comfortable sharing, I would love to hear your mum's response to the sort of ever-growing reach of Mobilize and all the sort of brilliant quantitative and qualitative data that it's brought you about this community of carers in the UK and beyond.
Yeah, she loves it, actually. I think I have inherited quite a lot from her, particularly around, I mean, one of the things that is most striking about my mum is her ability just to talk to anyone, strike up a conversation, and within seconds of meeting someone, there'll be laughter about something or other that they'll have found in common. So I think she's really excited to see that. She's also, she's not someone to bang her own drum or toot her own trumpet too much, but I hope that she can recognize that she personally is an inspiration to lots of people who know her and who understand the challenges that she's had to grapple with and the challenges she grapples with every day. You know, just getting out of bed is a non-trivial experience for her. So, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to incorporate my relationship with my mum into something that we can share with other people around the country and around the world as well, and hopefully that people can get some value from.
Absolutely. Shout out to your mum. She sounds amazing.
She is great.
Okay, well, to finally round off the discussion, I'd love to quickly ask you a couple of quickfire questions, James. So starting off with a nice and easy one. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
Well, you know, this one, so I don't know if it would make any money, but oh my word, it would change the world. If you could proactively prompt the organization you're on the phone to and on hold to do a callback arrangement. So some of them have figured this out, but if you could drive it from your end, oh my word, that would make a lot of difference to a lot of carers' lives, often spending hours a day on hold to different organizations. And I know that would make people a lot happier, but also free them up to do a load of other stuff that they're not currently doing. As I say, I'm not sure it'd make any money, but it would be a great thing to do.
Yeah, the virtual queue thing is just brilliant. Like restaurants, like, you know, you're calling the, you know, electric company, stuff like that. It's just, yeah. So what tech invention makes you the most excited?
So this is a really boring answer, really. I mean, presumably everybody has said this in recent episodes, but the piece about generative AI and what it can do to synthesize information and then personalize the response for you and make it really accessible. I just think there is so much we can be doing. Very often in the exciting, shiny side of AI, but actually in some of the really boring and unsexy challenges that people have, I think generative AI can make a massive difference there and unlock some of the social challenges that we've been grappling with in policy terms for decades suddenly become manageable if we've got this new technology.
Absolutely. And what tech invention makes you the most concerned?
Well, maybe not an invention, but an approach. I think it would be a really sad and damaging world if we perpetuated this idea that tech can remove humans from the loop. And I think it would be a less good, less positive world if we all milled around just talking to technology all the time, and actually finding ways for technology to connect people more effectively, I think is the way that we can really thrive as people, as a society, as a human race.
And to the point of keeping humans in the loop, who's a literal human who's been integral to your career journey?
This is a corny one, I'm afraid, but my co-founder, Suzanne, is just phenomenal, and it's made such a difference. Having met her right at the beginning of our journey as Mobilize, she has a caring responsibility herself and comes at things from a completely different perspective to me all the time. So we're kind of chalk and cheese in many ways, but we have a shared passion around doing something that really makes a difference for carers and to do that at scale. And finding the humor in those low moments, because goodness me, low moments come when you're launching a startup. So having someone around by your side who can find something to giggle about when things get difficult, it's huge. So it's a real joy to be working with Suzanne. It's changed my life.
Someone to giggle with, that is a great, it's a great contributor to any career. What's an inspirational quote that stuck with you throughout your journey in tech and entrepreneurship?
You know, I don't know where I got this from, and I don't even know that it's an actual quote, but I just think of it all the time, and that is that nobody ever regrets trying and failing, but we always regret not trying. And that, for me, is such an important thought when we're trying to do something super difficult, right? And in all likelihood, this will not work out as I'm hoping it will. But you got to give it a go. And actually, even now, 5 years in, we're seeing some amazing stuff that we never thought possible because we've given it a go and we've kept on going. So, it's a quote, a phrase, an idiom that's close to my heart.
Nice. Well, that's a great one to end on, James. And just want to thank you for jumping on the pod today. I really love this episode because, you know, I think Mobilize is one of those examples of how tech alone can't save us, to invoke the name of this podcast. As you said in one of your quickfire answers, you know, it can connect us, but ultimately as kind of the humans in the process who need to exchange information and advice and frankly share their experiences and support each other. Love to see where you're building at Mobilize. So really grateful for you taking time away from that important mission to join us and share this story here.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
Where can folks learn more about Mobilize?
So you can head to mobilize.co.uk or hop onto the App Store and download the Mobilize app.
Sweet. And as always, folks who are listening, please give us a review, give us a 5-star rating. If you enjoyed the episode, that helps us get more amazing guests like Mr. James Townsend, co-founder and CEO of Mobilize. Thank you again, James.
Thank you.
Thank you.